Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Few would disagree that urban education in America, and certainly here in St. Louis, is in trouble. Test scores are down. There's a growing achievement gap. Dropout rates are high. Financial resources, they're limited. All conspire to offer a bleak future to many urban students. The situation's exacerbated here with accreditation problems in key districts and a cumbersome transfer program for many hundreds of students. A day-long symposium is scheduled at the University of Missouri next week to take a close look at school improvement issues, that's UMSL here, by the way, and what role the collective community can play in dealing with them. The keynote speaker at the event is Marianne Schmidt-Carey. She is president of Say Yes to Education. Her organization is making an impact in New York City and state on improving prospects and providing support for urban students. A little later, we'll be joined by Carol Basile, dean of the College of Education at UMSL, by Rich Patton, executive director of Vision for Children at Risk, an organization that promotes the well-being of young people at socioeconomic risk, and by Shelley Williams. She heads the Nine Network American Graduates Initiative, which broadcast a live town hall meeting last evening focusing on challenges facing today's students and how the community can help deal with them. But first, we'll be talking with Marianne Schmidt-Carey. Marianne, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Give us an overview, if you would, on your organization. I think many people here may not know much about Say Yes to Education.
I'd be happy to. We have been working in the field for 26 years, and we have always set out to accomplish the objective of enabling urban youth to aspire to and complete a post-secondary degree, which is something I think that distinguishes the organization. It caught my attention when somebody came to me about joining the organization about 8 years ago. Post-secondary completion, not just incremental test score increases. And what Say Yes is focused on is a predictable set of barriers that prevent children from setting that goal and accomplishing it. Some are academic, some are social, and some are health, and some are family and social neighborhood contexts. And over the last 2.5 decades, we have piloted and tested, learned and refined the types of academic, social, and health interventions that actually increase the probability of children being able to be successful and actually attain that post-secondary degree and become successful in life. More recently, we have started to work not just with cohorts of students because of early outcomes being incredibly positive in terms of high school and college completion rates, and we've modified the strategy to begin to work with whole cities. And our first two cities are Syracuse and Buffalo, New York.
Well, tell us how you're doing that. How are you working with the cities? What are the specifics there?
Well, the two big drivers for change in our program, one is actually offering a full tuition scholarship to people when they're young. And in the first couple of decades, we actually tested. We did research. If you offered the scholarship in 7th grade versus 5th grade versus 3rd grade versus kindergarten, and over a period of almost 20 years, we documented that the earlier you offered the promise and set that as the expectation, and then the longer you provided the supports, ultimately the better the outcomes you achieved. So that scholarship piece was incredibly important in creating a different expectation and creating hope, quite frankly. And so we knew that that was a piece that we had to think about. How do you do that at scale? The other side of the coin, it's not just setting that aspirational goal. Those barriers I talked about, you have to begin to minimize those. So we looked at those academic barriers, and the solutions that began to really address that was a longer school day, a longer school year, providing the kind of quality one-on-one tutoring and supports that enable children to get on a track to actually looking at rigorous curriculum and having those skills and readiness to be able to apply to and go to college. And then we also looked at how can we better identify social and health barriers and provide those kind of preventative services that really enable children to show up at school and be ready to learn. So when we started to look at it at large scale, we had to say, well, how can you do this? And we started to innovate around how you could actually align the resources and the capacity not only of a school system, but also of the different government partners, the city government, the county government in the context of New York State, and also local philanthropy and the corporate sector to really come together around being able to provide this broad set of services at scale to students on a consistent long-term basis.
You speak of local philanthropy and corporate involvement. That's where the money comes from to fund these scholarships?
On the scholarship side, we have two strategies. We've been partnering with private higher ed campuses across the country to stand with us to offer those scholarships. And in fact, tomorrow in Washington, D.C., we'll be announcing 11 new partners that will be joining our higher education compact. And I will not be releasing those today, but I'll be able to talk about them next week. But at that point, we'll have 53 private campuses that offer those full tuition scholarships. And then in addition to that, we help the community to organize to be able to have the capital to offer in perpetuity full tuition scholarships, last dollar scholarships to all of the public campuses in the particular state that we're working in.
How
so it's really getting everybody to pool their capital around a much more coherent, organized, strategic plan that maps to, through an evidence base, this goal of post-secondary completion.
How are school districts there responding to this effort and initiative?
Well, we've been very pleased to be able to start with two school systems, Syracuse and Buffalo, that were excited about the opportunity to be able to offer to all of their students and their families this opportunity to really galvanize and mobilize the whole community around this ambitious objective of every child ready for and able to succeed at the post-secondary level. The work in the field around actually creating the capacity and those pathways and the programs and the quality assurance mechanisms and getting the aligned funding, you know, that is all of the detailed work that, you know, we're very much in the thick of. And I think what's really important is that communities realize that this isn't just add water overnight solution. I mean, this is a sea change in thinking about what the goal is to begin with, and then how all of those different parts of government and the private sector work together to be able to deliver the programming that will accomplish that goal over multiple years. So it's iterative, it's a work in progress, but early positive outcomes start to get people more and more excited about continuing to work in these new ways, because working alone in silos is going to continue to get the poor outcomes that urban cities are seeing across the nation.
Do you have any input at all with regard to curriculum in the districts with which you're involved?
I mean, ultimately, the decisions about curriculum and instruction are still the primary purview of the school system, the superintendent, the school board. But what we do is we provide expert support. We come in, and on the front end, we help through a series of community asset mapping exercises and audits of curriculum, whether or not it maps and aligns to the Common Core standards, for example. We look at instructional strategies. We look at any of the programs that have previously been selected. What is the evidence base behind them? And we help to provide a fact base that allows all of the partners to come to the table and really have objective conversations about what's in place, what's working, what isn't working, why, and how can we work together to come up with a strategic plan and a process to be able to move together to get better outcomes in the future.
You know, sometimes there is resistance when outside organizations, if you will, come into a situation. Are you finding any of that at all?
I think that that's a critical issue. In the first city that we went into, there was a huge misperception that we as an outside organization were going to come in with all of our own programs, and we were going to displace the good work and the positive efforts of all of the local providers. Now, nothing could have been further from the truth, but we didn't communicate effectively. So what we work very hard to do now, and in our second city in Buffalo, we spent months before even beginning work in the city really engaging in that upfront work of seeing everything that's in place and looking at what's working. And the way that we determine what's working is by actually looking at measurable outcomes and metrics that all can agree you can make good decisions about. But our goal and our expectation is in every city that you go into, you are going to find effective programs. And what needs to happen rapidly is there needs to be a process where all of the partners that have the capacity to co-invest actually have that information and then collectively make decisions to take those effective programs to larger scale. What we tend to find is you see pockets of programs that do show a lot of promise, but they tend to be at small scale because they're funded in short-term grants. What we work to do is actually help an entire community create an investment strategy to take reliable resources at larger scale to map and align to those effective programs. And it's really just turning the equation on its head. You know, rather than funding really what works just through soft capital, we say let's use the core operating budgets of the school system, the city, the county, to ensure that those programs are truly available to every student so that you can begin to move the needle on outcomes at scale.
I know you've left a meeting to be with us for these few minutes today, Mary Ann, but a final question. You mentioned metrics a moment ago. Do you have any numbers with regard to the number of students who are taking advantage of this scholarship part of your program?
We've been in Syracuse, New York, which is a school system with 21,000 students. And to date, we've had approximately 2,500 students take advantage of the scholarship. We're in the very first year in Buffalo, New York, so we have our first group of students that are attending campuses throughout New York State and actually across the country through our Higher Ed Compact. And we will have final numbers on that shortly, but that will add about another 1,500 students. And what's exciting is that number just multiplies year over year, and you start to see a community that's increasing the percentage of kids that not only graduate from high school, but that matriculate to college. And then through our partnerships with state universities as well as these private campuses, we're implementing programs to ensure that students actually persist and complete their programs and have much broadened opportunities out in the real world after they complete those degrees.
Boy, it's all very impressive. Mary Ann Schmidt-Carey, thank you so much for being with us. Keep up the good work. I'm sure everybody at the table here we'll be meeting in just a couple of moments are going to be very impressed with your presentation here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's Mary Ann Schmidt-Carey of Say Yes to Education. When we come back, we will take a closer look at the local picture. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. As you just heard in our first segment today, we spoke with Mary Ann Schmidt-Carey of Say Yes to Education about problems facing urban education and the need for a collective solution. With me in studio to continue the discussion from a local perspective, Carol Basile, Dean of the College of Education at UMSL, Rich Patton, Executive Director of Vision for Children at Risk, an organization that promotes the well-being of young people at socioeconomic risk, and by Shelley Williams. She heads the Nine Network American Graduates Initiative, which broadcast a live town hall meeting last night on Channel 9, focusing on challenges facing today's students. Thank you all for being with us today. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
Carol, let me begin with you. Let me get your reaction to what we just heard from Mary Ann.
I think it's all on the right track, and I think that if we can even do part of what she's talking about that she's already done now for a long period of time, it will take us really light years ahead. I think it's all the right messages. It's thinking about the whole child when she talks about the academic, the social, the health, both the physical and mental health of kids, when she talks about taking things to scale, when she talks about how the community needs to get together, funding needs to come together. I keep talking about every kid needs a Carfax. We need to know all the data. We need to know everything about what's going on with these kids, who's serving kids. So it's all good stuff as far as I'm concerned.
But you also said you don't water it tonight and expect to have a full garden tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's going to take some work. I think at least here the conversation has started. We're on a good path. We've got lots of people who are coming together. We saw evidence of that last night at the town hall. And with the outcomes of the events that we've got going on over the next 2 months, there's a tremendous amount of interest.
Shelley, were you hearing things last night that sounded a lot like Mary Ann?
Oh, definitely. All the way from what Carol was saying as far as the needs for student supports academically, emotionally, socially, culturally, all of those things need to be built into them. And we can't expect students to just walk into a classroom and they haven't eaten breakfast and perform, parallel to other students that have those opportunities to have breakfast and those basic needs met, basically. And a lot of that was reiterated in the conversation last night. So how do we do a better job in our community as far as supporting those students outside of the classroom, inside of the classroom, as parents, as educators, as city officials, as, you know, everyone coming together? And as Carol said, this is really integrated into the work that we're doing at the Nine Network with our American Graduate Initiative. What we're trying to do is set the stage for the larger conversation. So how do you bring community people into this so that they see that they're part of that solution? Because it can't just be alignment at the top. It's got to be alignment all the way across the board.
Rich, let me get your reaction to what Marianne said and what you've heard here at the table.
Yeah, I will throw in right behind Shelley. I think the issue here is not, from our perspective, schools but communities. The challenges that are faced in these schools and by these students that faced educational challenges and socioeconomic risk are deeply rooted in what goes on in their family, what goes on in this community. We've done business badly in the St. Louis region for a long time in terms of fragmenting governmental structures and school systems and integrating service delivery. So I think we have to address things from that perspective, not just look at the classroom and think about what can go on.
You're talking about a wholesale major change, it sounds like to me, in the way we do business.
Yeah, we have, you know, the governmental structure here, the school structure, are all fragmented and dysfunctional. We have 150,000 kids at the core of the metropolitan area who live in zip codes with high socioeconomic risk. We're not going to do very well under that circumstance. And I think what we need to work with folks to see is the connection between how well kids do and how well the overall community does in terms of economic development and quality of life. Those are the same issue ultimately, not different issues.
Carol, how do you mobilize the community?
I think we're on our way to that. I think the American Graduate Initiative, I think, is on its way. It's been trying to bring together educators, and I think we redefine who educators are, first of all. They're not just classroom teachers. They're people who are out there in multiple youth-serving organizations and everybody that has influence on kids. So we have to think broader about our definition and our lexicon about who educators are and who's influencing. So we've got to bring all those folks together and get them talking to each other. And we have to stop isolation. We've got to bring the businesses in. We've got to bring lots of other, our universities, and everybody's got to start talking and using the same common language around some of this. And I think that's the direction that we're trying to head. And I think that's where the city is really going now, is as we bring in different people to begin talking about collective impact.
Shelley, I don't want to minimize what happened on Channel 9 last night. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, in the big picture, that's only a few minutes. The problem becomes having people not forget what was discussed last night and marshaling those resources to continue. How do you plan to do that?
Exactly. As you said, it doesn't just take one conversation. It's an ongoing conversation. It's making sure that we have the right people in the room to really discuss what these issues are and get a better understanding of what they are from the perspective of not only just the educators or the parents or just the business community as it relates to the economic status of St. Louis, but what are our young people saying? So it's much broader than just having one town hall and then hoping that fixes the problem. As Marianne Schmidt-Carey pointed out, this is something you can't water overnight. It will take several conversations, several discussions, but it's how you start integrating a call to action to those people so that they get motivated to pass on the word and start seeing themselves as part of the solution. So part of last night was actually, yes, let's talk about the challenges, but then what can you do as a parent? And across the board, all of those students that sit up and talked, many of the parents and the educators or business leaders, they all pointed to the fact that caring adults is the number one solution to this. And as Carol said, it doesn't necessarily mean the teacher in the classroom. A caring adult can come from many different facets of life. So if we're really trying to do this as a community, then it's got to be everyone hands on deck.
Rich, it seems to me the most caring adult has to be the parent.
I think that's absolutely the case, but the question I think that lingers is, if they're not a skilled parent, if they're not a dedicated parent, what do we do? And I don't think it's an acceptable answer to say just tough luck to those kids. Most of these kids are young people who have not had the opportunity to merit misfortune. yet. And if that, if those needs are not met by the family at home, we have to figure out ways around that, how to address those effectively, not just from an ethical perspective. I know there was a piece in the Jewish Light here, a commentary from an academician a few weeks back that essentially said they're not all our kids. Well, and that was from an ethical, moral perspective. From a practical perspective, they all are our kids. If we don't provide for them, they hit us over the head when we walk down the street. They don't become customers. They don't become effective people in the workforce. They don't become good citizens. So we have to figure out, and that's why I go to the issue that it's a community problem, not a school problem, what we can do to get those young people up to where they need to be so when they get to school, they can succeed.
And if they get into trouble, the dropout rate is, I know that it was discussed last night, the dropout rate is significant. If they do get into trouble, then it's up to the rest of us to support them in some sort of penal institution.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. I don't think people really realize the connection between students that aren't graduating on time and then finding some sort of connection to either post-secondary education. Now, whether that's schooling for technical skills or graduating from college or whatever that looks like, but if they're not engaged, then they won't become productive citizens. And I think that's the whole idea as far as wraparound supports, what Mary Ann McCary was talking about. That's exactly what it takes. So when you have parents that aren't being effective parents, don't have those skills, or, you know, some parents just simply don't care. But that doesn't mean that their students are supposed to fall to the wayside. If we allow that to happen, that hits us, you know, economically. How many students are in prison because of that further down the line? As Rich said, they'll hit us over the head, you know. So the problems just continue to go on and mountain.
Yeah, Carol Basile, could we ever pull off in this community, do you think, the But could we ever pull off something like the scholarship program that that Mary Ann was talking about?
I think we could. I think we've got some good starts to that. I think we see that with what Beyond Housing is doing with their scholarship program and trying to provide that kind of support for kids. I think we all have to think that direction. There's a lot of scholarship money already apparent in this community. It's, are we putting it to the right use, and are we getting kids in the right to have access to those dollars at the right time? I think what was most interesting about what she said was the earlier they know they have it, the better off we are. And I think that's really the key to this. So it's not about are there the dollars, it's are we making sure that they know that there are dollars there from the get-go so that they see themselves having a future. We know we've got fourth graders out there who, you know, think of themselves as, by the time I get to 18, I'm either going to be dead or in jail. Mm-hmm. Can we turn that around by making sure that they understand that there are dollars there to get them into college? And it doesn't matter how much. We also know that even a little bit helps them to really think about their future. So it's about, you know, that early part, I think, is really important.
Shelley and Rich, do you think we could pull it off?
Oh, definitely. I think also part of that is that expectation. She talked a lot about raising that expectation of all students. And I think that's a critical piece. So to parallel with making sure that the dollars are in the right places and the resources are aligned across the community and distributed evenly amongst all of our students, I think having that expectation for them that they know that they can get to college and not just get there but graduate from college and go on to a productive life and be successful, that is really important. If you're coming from a household where that message isn't reiterated to you on a daily basis, and as Carol said, you have that expectation that I won't even make it to eighth grade, let alone, you know, make it to grow up and have a family and have all of these wonderful things and be this type of person. Then what kind of situation are we creating for our children that they don't even have that aspiration for themselves?
Rich, I would have to think that many of the kids that we're talking about, that college is the farthest thing from their mind. The most distant expectation they could possibly have is going to college.
Yeah, I think often it is, and what we need to do is make that real and possible for them. And I think to the question of can we do this, we have to do it. I mean, if you look at the region as a whole, we don't do well over the last decades in economic development. We don't do well in population growth. We don't do well on a lot of fronts. So it has to do with the future of this region.
But how do we overcome the fragmentation that you're talking about? We're talking about multiple school districts here. Should we have one area-wide school district?
I think the changes that have to be made are in large part structural. The structures we have encourage fragmentation. They encourage isolation of resources. And in one jurisdiction and problem in the others. And we have to fix things at that level. I don't think we can just wish that it's different or have individual programs that people work really hard on. We have to address the large structural issues.
I'll throw this out to anyone who chooses to answer. Are we fixing it, or our way to fixing it with this transfer program that's moving hundreds and hundreds of students to different districts at 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning to get their education?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily fixing it. I think what that situation creates is the opportunity for students to go to an accredited school to learn and for those parents to have the option to have that support that they need from those school districts. But at the same time, those school districts where that's happening, they are working to make the necessary progress so that they can get those students back. And I think it's students should be able to go to their neighborhood schools and prosper there and grow and learn and so on and so forth. And that is the challenge, is how do you really start, you know, going into those school districts and giving them the support that they need so that you're providing, you know, productive citizens, like I said before, that you're what they're producing is, you know, great for the region.
But, Carol, the last figure I saw was that this particular program is costing $35 million. I think the $35 million put into the districts that are unaccredited could go a long way toward making them a better district.
It could, but I think still this is about big structural change. I think Rich is absolutely right. I think this is, in some ways, I think this is a Band-Aid. I think that we, you know, this is, okay, this is the latest thing we're going to try, but this isn't really functionally, structurally changing our education system. We've got to really take a look at schools. We've got to look at the fact that they are still egg carton models of schooling, that we still expect every teacher to know what the collective we knows, that we're not sharing resources across school districts, that it's still about, you know, my district or my this or, you know, my kids, or it's still, we still have to get back to what is the big structural change that we need to make a difference here.
I want to point out to our audience, by the way, we're continuing this kind of conversation on Thursday. You mentioned Beyond Housing. Mm-hmm. Chris Kramer of Beyond Housing is going to be with us on Thursday to talk about what his organization is doing in the Vision 24-1 plan. Mm-hmm. We'll also have the new superintendent of the Normandy School District with us. And we all know the problems. I mean, that is a troubled district, if ever there was one. And we'll be talking with them. That's coming up on Thursday. We have a number of people want to get into this conversation. Before we take our next break, let's take a couple of calls, if you guys are ready for that. Okay, let's begin with Mike then, calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, this is Mike. I'm an old friend of Rich's, and there's the figurative bomb thrower out there spending lots of money to disrupt the Normandy and Riverview districts, and he has a goal of, I guess, disrupting public education in general and creating a voucher system, but how do we bring him into the conversation and his organization instead of worrying about the fact that Normandy is going to go bankrupt and we're not going to have any districts ultimately that are going to be able to withstand this kind of pressure?
Is that directed at Rich?
Well, Rich is one who's – we're talking about structural change. Does the structural change include going to more of a privatization or a charter structure, or – you know, my wife founded the best charter school in the city, and yet that's only a small portion of what we have to do.
I would say, and I've struggled with this, my organization struggled with this over the years, I think we need to forget the public school, private school, charter school distinctions and think about what's the best educational opportunity for individual children or kids in individual settings. I know there are odd things. We've dealt with some young people in Teach for America that were working with public school kids. They were in the St. Louis public schools to place them in private high schools. I think we need just to forget that debate, kind of ideological often, and look for each kid in each setting and think about what's the best educational opportunity for them and how can we connect them.
And who makes the decision as to what's the best opportunity?
I think that the family does ideally, and if not the family, then who's ever in the educational setting that the child is in.
Agreed?
Agreed. I think you need a diversity of educational settings. It's not one size fits all.
Right. And we actually heard that from the students last night in the town hall, that they need that flexibility when it comes to the curriculum, that they're looking for something that You know, if one teacher is teaching algebra, they might not understand it the same way that they're teaching it over and over and over again throughout the year. So I think it is having that flexibility amongst the educators that are in the classroom, but then across school districts as well. What works for one family might not be the best fit for another.
So the teachers have to be brought into this big time.
Oh, definitely.
Let's take another call before the break. Dennis in Overland, go ahead.
Yeah, this sounds probably grandiose, but I think structurally, I've been looking at this for a long time. Every time we do any new construction, I think it would be in our interest to put one floor that has some sort of clinic, and it's there for the students, obviously, but also, hopefully, for the community. And it could become a place where when we're in a situation like what's going on in Boulder, it could be the place where everybody goes to. And as you each time you do new construction, you do this. And hopefully it contributes to the stability of the neighborhood and the students. And maybe you involve them in FEMA-type things and have them be being a part of the community. So much of what we have going on is... I got to get out of here rather than I got to make this better. And the other thing that's concerning me is I used to tell people to when they were getting an education to become a teacher. I don't do that anymore because we have pretty much denigrated teachers for so long that it's not a stable profession, and we have to somehow come up with a way to make it that way. So thank you, and I'm with you, but I'm just concerned. But I thought I would suggest that one idea, you know, for long term, for all of our schools.
Dennis, thanks for the thought. Any comment with regard to Dennis's suggestion?
So nationally, there are community schools, and that has been a movement. That we've seen really exactly what Dennis is talking about, where we see more community service in schools, and schools are really much more closely aligned with what the community needs. And I think, you know, we've got to address, again, we get back to that, the academic, social, and health piece of where kids are coming from. And so building those services in and thinking about those things is a good thing to think about.
It all costs money. Where does that come from? Nobody has the answer to that question, really. Let's take a break. We're talking about education, community involvement, and educating our kids in this area. With me in studio, Shelley Williams, project manager for American Graduate. Let's Make It Happen. That program aired last night on the Nine Network here in St. Louis. She was a big part of that. Carol Basile, Dean and Professor of College of Education at the University of Missouri-St. Louis, is with me in studio, as is Rich Patton, Executive Director of Vision for Children at Risk. We'll come back and continue the conversation. Take more of your calls at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or a tweet at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll continue our conversation on the situation and our school system here in the region and what can be done to improve them. We'll have that conversation momentarily, but here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Missouri State Treasurer Clint Zweifel is warning people about an increasingly common practice called a pension advance. That's where companies promise fast cash, but it often results in costing retirees thousands of dollars in interest and fees. Zweifel says he will work with the legislature to restrict the practice. And Democrat Bill Daley held a downtown Chicago news conference today announcing he will not challenge Governor Pat Quinn in a Democratic primary. However, the former White House chief of staff said he will not endorse Quinn in his reelection bid. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Carol Basile, Shelley Williams, and Rich Patton talking about the issues facing school improvement in our area. Let's go right to the phones, and we'll bring in Heather, who's joining us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Heather. You're on the air.
Okay, thank you for taking my call. I'm sure people on your panel are well aware of City Garden Montessori, which is in the city. And I was wondering how they feel about instituting Montessori education into the school system, into the public school system.
All right, Carol, let me ask you to respond to that.
So Montessori has been around for a very long time, and it's been a very successful program, I think, where it makes sense. That's an option.
I have an email here from Tom in Apton. He says, I'm glad to hear that your guests are thinking of education in part as a preparation for citizenship. Most public discussions of education in recent years seem to focus only on preparing students to find their place in the economy. When I was a student, we had to study both the U.S. and Missouri constitutions and pass an exam on each document. I don't know whether it was effective, but public education was concerned with preparing us to be good citizens. Are students still required to study the U.S. and state constitutions? That's somewhat off point, but Carol, you're...
But they are, and I think the real point here is that, you know, the end game we always talk about, you know, so what is the end game for kids? Is it graduating high school? Is it graduating college? Is it getting into post-secondary? But I think that the real purpose around schooling and thinking about schooling in a democracy is creating good citizens and having people who get out and they're part of the workforce. So I think we've got to look at that. We've got to take the long view and thinking about what citizenship means and where we want kids to head, because this there is a huge social and economic impact around whether – just not whether kids get out of high school or college, but about whether or not they can actually get out and get into the workforce and be productive citizens.
There's an awful lot of talk these days and some criticism about teaching to the test and the fact that we're giving up a lot of the humanities, if you will, in order to the core curricula here. What do you think about that, Shelley? Do you have a –
Yeah, sure. We actually hosted the town hall that we had yesterday was actually a second town hall that we've done for American Graduate. The first one that we had was strictly with educators, actually. We had over 100 teachers that were in our studios, and they talked to us about the challenges that they're facing in the classroom. So, and part of that was that they don't feel empowered to do their jobs. That was a huge common thread amongst the conversation with those 100 teachers. And in addition to that, we also had town halls that we did with all the other public media stations that we work with across the nation. So all these discussions with all of these teachers, and that was one of the common core threads across all of them, is that they're not being empowered to do their job. And that teaching to the test is really crippling for them. At least from their perspective and their vantage point, because they don't have the time to go back and review lessons with their students, or they don't have the time to make the lessons fit for the needs of that student, how based on how they learn and how they really react to what they're supposed to be learning and testing and so on and so forth. So I think that is a huge issue. I'm not exactly sure how teachers sort of work within the system to get that changed. But I think part of that is also that comes from the parents as far as what their expectations are and what their students should be learning. So if the parents aren't demanding that their students are being taught creative curriculums and that they have the opportunity to really delve into all the different types of topics and subjects like arts and that discover that they have that music is their thing and that motivates them, that connects them to science in some way and motivates them to even test better as an end result. So I think it's thinking about that larger picture. And if we aren't really giving our teachers the opportunity to do that, then we're setting our students up as well.
Rich, another subject that comes up a lot when we talk about education is early childhood education. We've done a number of programs on that. Everyone seems to agree, and I'm asking you if you do, that this is really a critical element in getting the kids off to a start pre-kindergarten.
I totally agree. We work across six what we call fundamental needs areas for kids. One is early childhood. If I had to pick among those, then that would be a politically unwise choice, working with 400 agencies across that spectrum. It would be early childhood, particularly for kids who are at risk, socioeconomic risk, whose needs are not met. The benefits are big. They go on longer. They're cheaper. They prepare kids for school. They prepare kids for life. If there was a programmatic area and a policy area in which to focus, a single one, that certainly would get my nod.
Right. I suppose we're not going to get disagreement on that from anybody else at this table. It's a big, big issue. And talk about incentivizing kids. If you start them earlier, it's definitely going to make them think about things like college perhaps sooner than they might have otherwise. Let's bring in Jennifer, calling from St. Louis. Jennifer, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to speak on the involving community and helping kids. I live in South City, and one of my nephew's best friends that he's had, they're 16 now, and he's had them for about 10 years. His mom had a stroke about 3 years ago, and she wasn't able to talk, and she's not functioning really well. So that left him, this, you know, 16-year-old, I think at the time about 13, and his brother, who's 21 now, so about 5 years older, kind of on their own. And so when he started having difficulty at school, there was nobody really able to, like, go up and talk to the school for him or really, you know, help him on, you know, his a parental behalf, really. And so he ended up getting put out of school, and I talked to him and encouraged him to, you know, go back to school, we'd find a different school for him, and to go back to school, and that I would be willing, if he graduated, to help pay for his college and get him a car and stuff. Because I think it's important as a community to support other people that you're close to, even if they're not family, to help kids like him to, you know, not feel so devastated because, you know, some circumstances happen where he lost his support system.
Jennifer,
so
thank
I
you.
I just think that's important.
Right. Thank you so much for the call. Well, this is what we're talking about. We need more Jennifers out there. And preferably some Jennifers out there with deep pockets, needless to say. But, you know, one of the things that she mentions, I wonder, you know, how well prepared we are to deal with these single-parent household families, for instance, where you do have these kids who kind of fall through the cracks and need a helping hand from someone like Jennifer. Is there an apparatus out there, do any of you know, to help kids like this?
Well, I think it's, I mean, I don't know if there's an actual apparatus for that, but I think it's really, like I said, understanding what the challenges are when it comes to students. And teachers don't, you know, we expect them to be the mom, the dad, the uncle, the grandma,
right?
The babysitter, the whole package. So that's a lot of pressure on their end. So just allowing more agencies to come in and support those educators so that they can do what they're there to do, which is to teach. But when we talk about getting the Jennifers of the world involved, I mean, that's a critical piece of it, which is why we hosted things like the community town hall last night. And so our call to action was take the next step and get involved. It's great to talk about things. It's great to get a better understanding and just kind of get the lay of the land. But if you're not going to do anything after that, that's where we start falling short. So part of that, the broadcast that we did last night, was to point people to ninet.org/AmericanGraduate, where they'll learn about our community partners who we've been working with for over the last 2 years to really think about this collectively. How do we start getting the message out there in everyone's living room, to everyone's kitchen table, to think about education differently and how they play a role in supporting all students?
We'll put a link to your website on our website at stlpublicradio.org so folks can have a look. Let's bring in Allison. Allison, go ahead. You're on the air.
Great. Thanks, Don. I'm Allison, and I am with Wyman, a teen development agency here in St. Louis, and we are proud to be partners in the work with Shelley, with Carol, with Rich, and with many other great organizations, funders, educational agencies in our community who are really willing to start taking this step forward and thinking about bolder thinking, bolder action, and what does it really mean to, you know, truly have a system that supports young people from cradle to career. What I wanted to comment on is really what I heard from young people. So I had the privilege of being at last night's town hall, and I think we often can get really overwhelmed by these kinds of conversations. You think about the student transfer issue. You think about the dollars that are involved. It can get incredibly overwhelming, and it can be really easy to simply check out of the process. What we heard from young people, however, were things that are very foundational, things that we can all align behind, and people like the Jennifers of the world, organizations and schools themselves, we can start to think differently about what young people are saying they really need. We heard young people speaking to the value of relationships. Nearly a quarter of the town hall meeting was focused on how they need those appropriate, supportive adult relationships and the role that that can play. We heard young people talking about opportunities to be engaged in their community. We do a huge amount of community service learning work with young people through our programs at Wyman and our partners. And once you get them engaged, there's no stopping them. They continue to engage. They grow and learn so much from that. And we heard young people talking about, help me understand how my learning is really relevant. How does this make sense to where I'm going? Don't just give me a textbook, but help me think differently. Those pieces aren't rocket science. Those are really foundational pieces. And I think it really creates an opportunity to really listen to our young people and allow that to inform this process and where we continue to move
Allison,
forward.
Let me stop you. You're going on and on, and we appreciate what you're saying, but time's getting away. I want to give folks a chance to respond, particularly with regard to the relationship issue, Carol.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've talked about, you know, every kid needs a caring adult. Well, the fact is really every kid needs a caring team of adults. Even the best parents who are out there don't have all the resources, don't know where to turn. You can't be everything to your kid when your kid needs it. So I think this notion of thinking about us, our community and the collective impact is that we're creating teams of caring adults for kids who get them what they need when they need it.
Important part of it, as is funding. Let's bring in Jerry from O'Fallon, who wants to address that issue. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, it seems to me that not only in the region but in the country, the way that we fund our school systems is a plan for failure. Because as we've seen time and time again, as I've seen personally, you have as an example, a fully well-functioning school district that I had joined into probably over 50 years ago, and you know, in the area that. As standards decline and as property values decrease, there's less funding available, and the people that care and have the means to move somewhere else, which of course further declines the value. People are less likely to vote for any kind of a bond issue or any kind of a tax increase to better fund their schools, because you're left with people that are working hard just to pay for the necessities. And I think until we can address that problem, and we're probably talking about, you know, on a national level, and until people really become able to think in terms of this is our community, and whether or not you think it's right that your tax dollars support someone in a different state or a different part of the state, you know, the bottom line, I think, as you alluded to earlier, we can spend a little bit more now on education. We can spend a lot more later on for incarceration, and that's our choice.
Any thoughts?
Yeah, I would jump in there. One thing we've not touched on is middle-class school environments. The research shows that all children, learn best in middle-class school environments. That's why historically black colleges have been so successful. Try to do that in St. Louis with the demographics we have, with the fragmentation we have. I think we need to create stable communities, as was just suggested by this gentleman. We need to figure out how to create middle-class school environments where kids learn and cost becomes less of an issue.
Any other comment to Jerry? I have a tweet here from Ed while we're talking about this kind of thing. He asks, any evidence that schools that do service in their community have an easier time getting taxes passed? And I think trying to make a connection between a closer proximity to the schools and what they do to the community itself. Any thoughts there? I guess not. Mm-hmm. One more quick line here. I'm going to bring in Linda from St. Louis, but Linda's got to be very quick. I want to hear what your proposal is.
Thank
Linda,
you.
Go ahead, quickly,
yes,
please.
Thank you. A couple of things. One thing is I'm a geriatric social worker, but I do believe that every school needs a social worker. I think it needs to be child-centered so they have the kids get the resources they need and the help they need. The other thing is that I think the schools need to plug into the programs, the universities that have educational programs, so the kids, college kids can do practicums at the schools so that the kids can have tutoring after school, before school, even during school. And I think there needs to be a homework hotline accessible to the children so that they can call anytime that they need help with their homework.
Linda, thank you so much for the call. Anybody want to comment on what Linda has to say?
Yes to all those things.
Yeah, I don't think she said anything that we only have about a minute left. I'm going to go around the table quickly, starting with you, Rich. A quick final thought, but 15 seconds.
We've got to do it. The future of our kids and the future of this community depend on that. So it's hard, but we have to do it.
And I would just echo Rich and just say, get involved. Don't listen to the radio show and then not do anything.
Right. And Carol Bazile?
We need to prepare educators that really understand the community. We need to stop the isolation of parents and educators, and we need to work collectively, and we need to do it now. There's an urgency about this.
Mm-hmm. And if there's any momentum that was generated last night, it has to be continued. That seems to be a problem in St. Louis sometimes. Mm-hmm. The best intended motives sometimes fall by the wayside for lack of follow-up. That's not going to happen, Shelley, right?
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
Okay. That's Shelley Williams, project manager, that is, for American Graduate. Let's Make It Happen, a town hall meeting last night in Channel 9. Rich Patton is with us, executive director of Vision for Children at Risk, and Dean Carol Bazile, dean and professor of the College of Education, University of Missouri, St. Louis. Thank you so much all for being with us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Sue Grafton about her writing career and her new mystery. And looking ahead to next week on Thursday, September 26th, we'll convene our monthly legal roundtable in the courtroom of the new St. Louis University Law School downtown. If you'd like to be a part of the audience that day, plan on arriving by 11:30 for the noon broadcast. Archive versions of past programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis is on the Air, a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.